Accession number 24198, rule 1.
This is the first reel of taking you with Jim Boyd in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 27th of the 9th, 2002, at the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Jim, can we begin the interview by you telling us your full name and where and when you were born, please?
Robert Edward Boyd. Jim's only a nickname. I was born on the 25th of March, 1912.
Tell us a little bit about your family.
My mother died fairly young, and I was only more or less a baby when she went. I never saw my father. After I enlisted in the army, I went away, and he died before I came back.
Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Bunbury. From Bunbury I went to stay with my aunties in Perth, and lived a lot of my life there. Went to New Norcia College to get me out of the road, I think it was.
What was New Norcia College like?
A good place. Oh, it is. I think it was more or less that the auntie was getting a bit old and she couldn't look after me kind of thing, so I got on my feet.
So how old were you, would you say?
Well, I'd be 12 when I went to New Norcia, and I left there when I was 14. Took a job then.
What would be, do you think, your strongest childhood memories?
I don't think I'd have any strongest ones. As I say, I was in Woorloo Sanatorium for a while to keep my mother company. I think she was in there, that's where she died. And I was just led a life of being pushed from one part of the family to another to look after me.
In relation to New Norcia College, tell us a little bit about what it was like being 12 to 13, 14 year old boy growing up in New Norcia.
Well, I soon woke up that if I had to study up there, well, I would study. As a matter of fact, I'm not building myself up, but I finished up Ducks of Four Standard. And you had to fight for everything amongst all the other kids. I woke up to that quick, but at the used my head that way too, but taken all around, I think it was a good training place.
What sorts of things did you want to do when you grew up? When you did you have any aspirations for what you wanted to be?
No, none at all. The first job that came along, I accepted it. It was in a furniture making shop in Perth. And they gave me an apprenticeship as a wood machinist. And it only lasted about 18 months, and that firm went bankrupt. So apprenticeship was no good to me. And I thought, well, There's only two things in life, in my opinion. The first one is, the best thing is, if you can get a government job, you've got a job for life. So I looked around and I got into the railways as a casual, and then they made me permanent, and I put in about 21 years in the railways.
Presumably coming back to the railways after the war?
Yes, I came back there.
What did your jobs include before you went away?
I was shunting in the yards, kicking trucks around, making up trains and that. Goods office, work kind of thing, and, big firms, Wood Sons, and that were going. They'd come in with two or three lorry loads of stuff a day, send them up the bush, and you'd check all that off and put it away in the different trucks that were going to their destination.
As a as a boy growing into manhood, how would you rate, do you think, your experience?
Growing into manhood, I was a bit of a scallywag. I thought, well, I'll see what I can get out of this world. I've got a long while to live in it, so I might as well get what I can out of it. But it didn't work out that way.
No?
No.
Why not?
I got into a few bits of bother, different things, and altered my mind altogether.
In relation to the period before the Second World War and the period between, obviously, the two world wars, obviously the Depression was something that came to the fore.
Oh, yes.
Can you describe to us how the depression affected you?
Yes, things were tough then. I was working on the mines in Kalgoorlie at that time. And things were tough if you didn't have a job, but if you had a job, things were cheap.
I get the impression that Kalgoorlie was quite a good place to live during the Depression.
It was, yeah. I left there in 1935 and come down to Fremantle. I got transferred in the railways by that time down to Fremantle Woodsheds. And I've been here ever since in Fremantle.
So tell us, I'm interested to know what the general atmosphere was in relation to how people saw the world during the Depression years, looking to the future. Could they see an end to it, do you think?
No, I didn't. I couldn't see an end to it. As a matter of fact, I thought, well, those that have got the money, they'll get through it, but those that haven't got the money won't get through it. But,
did you sense a strong sort of divide between class, between working class, middle class?
No, I think it was two classes, I'd put it that way, the working class and what I call the upper class. They kept to themselves and we more or less kept to ourselves. Made the best of everything we could.
The impression is it was a pretty tough sort of existence, would I be right?
Yeah, oh yes, of course. Went without many a meal. As I say, things were cheap, but you had to buy different things, and sometimes you never had enough to buy a meal.
Did you take on extra work to try and supplement that lack of money?
No, the point was that seemed to be that there was just no jobs around. I had a lucky experience around that time. I'd been out of work for some time, and I had no, well, I had the thought of getting a job if I could, but I had to go around to several firms through the day, but no one wanted to put anyone on. And I was walking past Bones in Wellington Street, and a woman that I knew through the father, I ran into her and she said, "Hello, and what are you doing?" I said, "I'm looking for a job." Well, she said, "I think I can fix you up with a job." And I thought, "Gee, beauty." I said, "I'm not interested. What is long as it's a job?" And it was chap that she was living with, he was a mine manager up in Norseman. So I finished up going up there, and to be quite honest, the people that had put their money into shares there, they just murdered it.
So that was how you got into mining work?
Yeah.
I'm interested to know also whether there was much thought about the First World War at all.
No, people seem to forget all about the First World War as far as I can remember. I wasn't interested in war. My father never went to the war, so I suppose only natural I followed him. I thought wars were, I couldn't understand why they happened. I thought they were silly.
Was that the general attitude, do you think?
I think so. Everyone wished that there wouldn't be, never be another one, but the bloody world's gone mad now.
In relation to, you mentioned that you were working in the railways in Fremantle in 1935.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the situation in Europe had been changing a little bit in those few years before.
Hitler was coming into power, and we used to read in the papers. A lot of it mightn't have been true, you never know with papers, but I thought to myself, well, he's a bit of a bastard, this bloke. And I was in essential services, which was the railways. You could get out of going to war if you wanted to. But I went up and got a form, and they signed it, releasing me from the railways, and I enlisted in the war.
Before we get to that point, when was it, do you think, that you found out or heard about Hitler for the first time?
Well, the papers used to be full of it, of pictures and things like that, and I pictured how a man's mind could work that way to cause so much rupture in a world that, in my opinion at the time, was going along quite smoothly.
So you would have have rated the world going on fairly well in the early 30s.
Yeah.
What were some of the strongest recollections that you have of what Hitler was doing before the war?
Well, we used to hear about all these and see pictures in the paper of the old Jewish shops being windows smashed, everything taken out and pinched. And I thought, well, what would he have against the Jews? We used to picture them around that time as a lot of them were wealthy men, Jews, even in Australia. We couldn't understand why he just picked on that race.
Do you remember the 1936 Olympic Games?
No.
Right. I was interested to know what you recalled of some of the political questions of the time in relation to how he was being appeased by other governments. Did you have an interest in that?
Politics? No, never interested me.
Was that a general sort of attitude, do you think, amongst you?
I think it was the average of my age and other young chaps. Politicians were top of the pound as far as we were concerned.
And in relation to England, how was England seen by the average working class Australian bloke?
Well, I myself never used to give them much thought. I thought, well, they've got their troubles, I suppose, and we've got ours, but I thought, well, Hitler is closer to them with his army than what he is to us. We're pretty safe.
Did it, for instance, strike you that if England went to war with anyone, that Australia might go to war?
Oh, well? Yes. But I never expected that I'd go, not at the time.
So when Chamberlain went to talk Turkey with Hitler and came back waving this paper, what was the general thought?
Bloody weak. Yes, I think the people of Australia knew how weak he was after that bit of business because my opinion, you could see that Hitler wasn't going to be stopped by the likes of him. He had no chance of appeasing him. He had nothing to offer him.
What about the loyalty that people such as yourself had towards Britain?
I don't think it was loyalty towards Britain. We knew that we were one of their possessions kind of thing that made up the Dominion. But it was our own country. We thought, well, we all have to hop in and help one another. But England on its own, we just never used to picture it being a wartime solution.
In relation to the coming of the Second World War, when was it, do you think, that you knew that there was going to be another World War?
Pretty early on, even after Chamberlain going back, I think altered a lot of people's views of the situation there, though I think people woke up that Hitler wasn't going to give in that easy. Chamberlain thought. But even when the war started, well, you might as well say it had been going 2 years before I went overseas. That's training here kind of thing.
What do you recall of the beginning of the war, of the announcement of the war? September 3rd, 1939.
Very little. We knew war was declared, but I myself didn't picture a nation like Australia all rushing in so quick to try and do something about it.
To what degree was the fact that distance?
Well, that's why we thought we were safe out here, and a lot of people didn't worry about it, but it proved me wrong, because they never had to call for volunteers or anything. No, well, everyone volunteered just to join the army kind of thing. We knew Britain was in trouble, so.
The 15th of September, there was the announcement of the raising of the 20,000 force. The initial reaction would assume, from what you're saying, was quite positive. What of you and your mates in this situation? When did you start seriously thinking of joining up?
Well, I never joined with any of my mates, actually. I told them that I was going to enlist. And they said, "You're bloody mad." I said, "Well, that's up to you. You please yourself." And I just made arrangements to leave the railways, get a clearance, and go into the army.
So the majority of your mates actually wanted to stay at home?
I should think so, yes.
What was it then that drove you to think about heading off against your mates' wishes? Often blokes join up because their mates are going away.
Mm.
What was it that drove you, do you think?
It might have been that I had ideas that a lot of my mates would have enlisted with me. But when they didn't, I thought, well, I'll enlist myself and show them what I thought of them. I think that's what made me enlist.
So was there any interest in adventure on your part?
Oh, yes, I knew it would be an adventurous sort of a life. I hope there was no number on a bullet over there for me, that's what I thought. Which there wasn't, luckily.
People have obviously heard stories of the First World War. Did they play on your mind in relation to joining us?
Well, they didn't, for the simple reason that they thought, well, it'll be a different sort of war altogether with the equipment they've got now to what they had in them times. But I was very surprised when I joined the army, they gave me a bloody 1918 rifle and bayonet. It was my sole weapon. And I thought, well, that's how backward we are.
We can talk about some of those equipment problems a little later on. I'm interested, before you actually joined up, to what degree propaganda had played a part in your decision to join?
No, none at all. I just thought, oh well, it'll be a bit of adventure somewhere in it. And people said, oh, you're mad, you're leaving a good job here to go over there and fight for five bob a day. I thought, oh well, that's how things go. I was looking towards a bit of adventure, but I didn't know what it'd be like, but I thought, well, I'll find out.
What about friends and relatives? How did they sort of feel about you going away, do you think?
My father was against it. The first time he saw me in uniform, he said, I'll try and get you out of that. And I said, you won't get me out of it. And he said, well, I'll stop you from going overseas. I said, you can't do that either. He wanted me to, he fixed it with a sergeant in Northern Camp who was a chiropodist. And he said, yeah, well, he said, I'll get him transferred here and I'll teach him the trade and that'll keep him in Australia. It didn't work out that way because I didn't want to even go over there. I knocked the transfer back to stay in the infantry.
Why do you think your father was so against you being in the army?
Well, I think he looked at it that he'd produced two sons and Kevin, he's younger than me, he's still grown. He joined the Navy and I joined the Army and he said, good God, he said, two sons, and he said, I forfeited both them to go to a bloody war. He said, you're the oldest, he said, at least I'd keep you behind here with me. I said, no, it doesn't work out that way, Dad. I said, I've made my mind up.
So when you've made your mind up, tell us about the actual process of being processed to get into the army. What did you have to do to get in?
Well, we all went up on the day I went up, it was in Bazaar Terrace in Perth. They had queues of blokes going in and dozens of doctors there.
What was the atmosphere like there?
Oh, jovial. Everyone was cracking jokes and saying, you know, different life altogether. We'll show them how to fight, kind of. Oh no, the medical examination took about 3 hours, I suppose. Then they signed the papers to enlist. And we went to Claremont Showgrounds for 2 nights and then we were transferred to Northern Camp and that's where I...
Do you remember what you had to sign?
No.
Did you care?
No, I didn't care, just... The big heading was enlistment. That seemed to strike me high and I thought, well, that's what I know I am doing, I'm enlisting in the army.
What then was it like to be in uniform? How did you feel?
Oh, I liked it myself, the cock of the hoop kind of thing. I tried to be. We used to get a fair amount of leave from Northern Camp. Come down and see your parents and things like that if you had them.
People talk of joining up and saying things like, oh, it will be over by Christmas. Was that something that you felt?
Well, I honestly didn't think that it would go as long as what it did with the equipment that they had, and I thought America would have come into it sooner than what they did, and I thought, well, it'll be over quicker than what we think, but it didn't pan out that way.